So I can do, I'm sitting there, we're attacking, and we've got 75,000 people in our 450, so it's pretty hard. You know, once again, we're to figure out how to negate. It's probably happened a couple of times this year, and, you know, it's become a tactic in the AFL. Fallback mentality is really, you know, keeping sides in games at the moment, and it's creating probably the game that we got tonight.
So we held up defensively, but just couldn't go forward with it. Just didn't have the scoring or the power in front of the ball or the experience in front of the ball to get through. We sort of look up, and they were set up very strong defensively. We just kept our six defenders. They had an extra up at the ball. So our six defenders just played behind the ball. So it wasn't, we didn't have seven defenders.
Welcome to First Crack. That's John Longmire and Damien Hardwick playing a little bit of the blame game. Hello, David King and Lee Montagna. We've got so much to get through tonight, but I want to delve into this first of all, because this is going to be a talking point all week, I think. Whose fault is it that football is so ugly so often? But before we do, Who's On First is a comedy skit from your era, King.
My era.
It's a long
time
ago.
Who? Like the 30s.
Have a look at this.
Well, let's see now. We have on our team, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out, the guy's name. That's what I want to find out, the guy's name.
I'm telling you, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
Now, Abby, you want to be the manager of the baseball team?
Yes.
You know the guy's names?
Well, I should.
Well, now you tell me the guy's names on the baseball team.
I say, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
You ain't saying nothing to me yet. Go ahead and tell me.
I'm telling him.
You ain't said nothing yet. Go ahead and tell me.
Who's on first, what's on second, I don't know is on third.
You know the guy's names on the baseball team?
Yes.
Well, go ahead. Who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the guy's name.
Who?
The guy playing first.
Who?
The guy playing first base.
Who?
The guy on first base.
Who is on first?
What are you asking me for? I don't know.
That's what's happening, mate.
That's Abbott and Costello from a long time ago. It is before your time. King, well, why is that relevant?
Dimmer's blaming Horse. Horse is blaming Dimmer. Clarko's blaming the umpires. The umpires are lost. They're going to the AFL. The AFL are saying, no problems here, no problems. Just change those rules if you can. Don't tell anyone. Bevo's got the shits with Clarko changing the rules. Then you got the AFL. They're all upset. Someone's... I mean, it might even be the security guards with benefits. What might be their fault? I don't know. It could be the hubs. Who knows?
That's security.
But at the end of it all, something has to give. At some point, we have to say, we have a problem.
Yeah.
And someone has to say, how do we fix it? It can't be the coaches, because we've seen what the coaches have done today. Joey, and I don't know where to, until someone says from the AFL, it's on our watch. Let's fix it.
So whose call is that at the AFL? Who is it? Is it Steve Hocking? Is it Gill? Is it the commission? Is it Brad Scott? Who's in charge of actually making the call?
Four goals to three. Again,
at the Gabba tonight.
It's just another one of those games that... and we're having a few of them. We love watching the contest. We do. And we'll watch it regardless of what the score is. But, you know, I think it was 18 months ago, we had David Rath and James Podzielli do a big expose on where the game's at with ball movement and those sorts of things. We've got Brad Scott going in to join Steve Hocking at the AFL, watching the game. That's great. But what are they doing?
Yep.
What's the answer? What's the outcome? Because if we just put our heads in the sand and say, oh, no, it's his fault, it's his fault, nothing gets changed.
But do we even actually still know what the problem is to then work out what the solution is? Because I'm hearing people saying, oh, it's because of interchange rotations. Oh, it's because of team defences and structures. Oh, it's because of coaching. Like, we still need to work out what the problem with the game is before we can even have a solution. I think that's part of the issue.
The problem from today, just listen to the both coaches there, Damien Hardwick is saying that, oh, they just rolling their numbers back, they're defending with all these players.
Yep.
And then Horse is saying, but they're defending in the forward line. So both teams at all times are defending.
Yes.
So I don't know what the answer is. I don't have the answer. Everyone's got a suggestion, but it's in the AFL's hands.
Yep.
This is their code. This is their role. So over to you guys.
Have we had a thought yet that John Longmire and Alistair Clarkson are two of the most influential coaches in the game, if not the two most influential coaches? And they are coaching teams that, let's be honest, are struggling. I know Hawthorn are 3-3, but the Sydney Swans are rebuilding. And in order to stay in games, they need to be defensive. They can't afford to let it go open and let it be free-flowing.
Now, every team needs to play defensive to win football. That's football. You've got to defend first. Every coach is defending really strongly. That's the reason why we're seeing the lowest scores we've seen.
Carlton kicked 100 tonight.
Yeah, they did. That's the first time since round two, and we'll get on that. But the average losing score is 50 points. So teams that are winning, it's not because they're scoring more. Yes, Carlton did tonight. Yeah. Teams that are winning because because they are stopping the opposition from scoring. And that's the issue we've got in our game. And my view is it's team defence has become so sophisticated. It's become so organised, so structured, it is almost impossible to get through. So we do need to make some changes. We do, because team defence and structures is here to stay. It's no longer man-on-man playing back shoulder like we want to have it in the 1980s. It's too sophisticated now, and it's taken over from offence. And now teams are being conservative with the ball because they know that if they play fast and play reckless, it goes back to the defence, and they're going to get scored against. So there's the chicken or the egg. The team defence is first. Everyone's now playing safe with the ball, and we're getting the stalemates that we're getting.
We're going to get to your first crack in a second. You said everyone's blaming everyone, Kingy. Yeah. Tell us who should be blamed. Who's at fault?
Who's at fault? Well, the coaches are at fault.
There we go.
Ultimately, and they know that.
Of course they know
But their job's to win games.
Okay.
So they're not going to say, look, I'm going to make this game look fantastic, but we're not going to win. I'm going to be unemployed in 2 years.
Exactly.
They're not going
to
do that.
They get paid to win.
So you've got to take it out of their control. This is why I come back to Steve Hocking. This is the role. The function of our game needs to be attractive to make people want to watch at the moment, to make people want to go when we can get back to the footy.
Yeah.
If you let defence take over so much, it just stifles our highlights.
Yeah.
So, you know, the onus is on those guys to get it right.
We've got teams that were really impressive on the weekend, and even if their teams lost, like Gold Coast, Isaac Rankin was unbelievable, and we'll get to them in a few moments' time, including Carlton tonight. Kicked 100 for the first time in quite some time, and I think the 4 times in the last 83 games they've kicked 100, so that was a very impressive win just a few moments ago over the Dogs. But what's your first crack, Joey?
Well, it's Corridor Carlton. I mean, it's not rocket science. We watched Carlton tonight. It's the first time any team's kicked 100 points since round 2. Now, they didn't do it recklessly. At the right times, they went into the corridor. It creates an overlap run from behind. It opens up the whole field for their forwards. And it just looked so much better watching the way that they were prepared to kick the ball into the corridor. So I just loved the way they played. And I think it's really refreshing. And King, I know you talk about point of difference. I think their 3 talls is a point of difference in the competition. Having McGovern, Casbolt and Harry Mackay in that forward line, when they work together and one's providing the outlet, one's the link man and one's deep, they are very hard to stop. And I give credit to David Teague for holding his nerve with McGovern. There was a lot of people in the outside saying McGovern should go, but that structure of having the 3 talls is a point of difference that not many other teams in the competition have got. And when it's up and going and they work well like they did tonight, I tell you what, they play very good football. Their other 2 wins against Essendon and Geelong, that form stacks up. I think Carlton can play finals this year. And
if can they can play finals?
Yeah, I think they can play finals, absolutely. They're the real deal.
They're in the 8 now.
Yep, and they did it without Paddy Cripps dominating. Paddy Cripps was as quiet as I've seen him, and they still dominated. So Carlton are growing by the week, and their ball movement, bringing into the corridor, their kicking skills are starting to stand out with their talent they've got.
Yeah.
I think they are playing great footy. And how refreshing was it to see some attacking footy?
Yeah, I wasn't sure about Jack Martin and I wasn't sure about Eddie Betts at the start of the year, whether they go down that path, getting that profile of player in that older player with a young list. 4 goals and 2 goals tonight, fantastic. McGovern, you talked about. Sellers was pretty hard.
He was very hard.
When you look at the way they score, though, Joe, and you're big on the game. You do a lot of work in your forward scouting analysis. They score from the forward half now.
Yeah.
It's not a fluky plan, is it? It's sustainable, and it's something that could see them win, you know, those 10, 11 games this
year. We're talking about team defences and how good they are. That is what is so crucial more than ever, to get the ball in your front half. Now, to do that, you have to win clearances. Now, Mark Pitton at net, what a recruit he's been. Yeah. He's doing a super job in
the
ruck. Is he
close to the recruit of the year?
Well, the influence that he's having at that club in regards to their clearance numbers, they're one of the best clearance teams in the competition, Carlton.
Yeah.
And as we said, we think it's just because of Paddy Cripps. Well, Matty Kennedy came into the side tonight. Was super. Murphy, Curnow, Setterfield, they're starting to really grow in that area. And when they get the ball in their front half, as Kingy said, they're playing modern footy. They're keeping it in there and they're scoring off turnovers. And I think they're ticking a lot of boxes. And don't forget their defence. Liam Jones and Wietering are both having sensational years. So the Blues, for me, ticking a lot of boxes.
Damien Hardwick was great with us at the end of last year, obviously. After they have success, they're going to be great with you. But we spoke about caretaker coaches and what they should do going into that first full year. And he said, continue to coach like a caretaker coach. I think you can see that with Carlton.
Yeah.
Everyone gets their hands on the steering wheel and they think, oh, we've got to defend, we've got to do this, we've got to do that. Credit to Brett Ratton, didn't work on the weekend, but he's opened things up and they play with some freedom. I think there's a couple of coaches could have a look at that. And I'm talking about Matty Nix, I'm talking about Reece Shaw, could have a look at maybe just freeing things up a bit, let the players express themselves. Because they get tired of playing a boring brand of footy and losing.
Is it not hard given the talent or the lack of talent that the Adelaide Crows have on their list? Like, they knew they were going to be down the bottom this year.
Let them express themselves. Yeah. Give them some rope. they're still always pull it back in.
And they're still talented. They're AFL quality players. They've got talent. And I think that's the keys. Not being able to just have one game plan and be so stringent with it. A team like Carlton and St Kilda have got different modes. They can kick it long to a contest when they need to. They can play fast when they need to. They can kick it around. You've got to be able to have that. But you've got to allow the players to make those decisions on the field. It's, if it's too stringent and say, this is how we want to play, this is what we're doing every time. We've seen teams doing it this year. They just get caught up playing the same way the whole time and don't change their game plan. Carlton, I like it. They've just got a bit of a different mix about them and they're playing some good footy.
Nick Riewoldt said two nights ago that St Kilda can win the flag. We like Cairns and Coulds, but I want to know, can Carlton, sorry, will Carlton make finals? Not can they make finals?
Well, they certainly can make
but
finals.
Yes,
if on the form I saw tonight, Carlton will play finals.
Very good. Kingy, what's your first track?
Just have a look. The ladder's a joke at the moment. Good luck if you can work out the eight.
Well, as we know, though, can I quickly with 11 games to go, we've got to look at it backtracking. There's 11 games to go. As you know, Kingy, at the halfway mark of most seasons with 11 games to go, there's very little change to the top eight. There's normally one or two changes a year. Now, I know this is an exceptional year, but I think it works in reverse. The teams that have only won three games have got to win seven of their last 11. So they've got to go 7-4. In a year where we've seen such inconsistent form. I think the teams that have won four games now, they're already locked in. They'll play finals. And there's a lot of teams
locked
on that. Yep, I reckon every team that's won four games will play. They've only got to go 6-5 on the way home.
Okay.
And
Be
I
cool.
think they'll do that.
Yep. Kingy,
you're
your
going
first
so
crack.
Well until you said that.
Yeah, okay.
You'd refuse to answer his question.
No, he got it.
They will play. Carlton will play finals. They'll sneak in.
Yeah, you've gone a bit too hard there, Joe.
I know. Well, we'll get the tape back out in October.
My first crack. Yeah. Something's got to give with the AFL table regarding the bump. If we are serious about changing...
MRO behavior, table.
Yeah, the table of how we work out whether you got 1 week of fine or 4 weeks, because it's out of kilter with what the actual demands of the game are and what we should demand of the MRO. Yeah. If you have a look at the hits on the weekend, and there was some severe head contact and head trauma on the weekend, and I'm massive on this. I mean, if you look at any sport around the world, the investment now in the concussion, it would be the number one spend. In the NFL, they allocated $500 million for a decade's worth of compensation for past players who are struggling with things like memory loss and confusion, personality changes, suicidal tendencies.
I understand, but what
all
about
these sorts of things?
What about paraplegia? It's something
all those things. I mean,
that matters.
It can, exactly. I mean, that's the next step again. And I just think that we wait to see what the outcome is all the time. But the player's still getting head trauma. Whether he's absolutely concussed and out for 10 minutes or just taken from the field for a checkup, there's head trauma. So you've got to start penalising the action. I think if we're going to be serious about it, we've had five hits this weekend.
Yep.
Five hits.
Yep.
So behaviour's not changing. As soon as we get these ones out the road, I think it's unfair to just go whack and give Ben Long 4, 5, 6 weeks just because he's in front of the queue at the moment.
Yeah.
But I think at some point later in the week, Steve Hocking, I know I've been big on Steve Hocking this week, but they need to look at how they're planning for the game going forward regarding concussion. Change the table. So, guys, if you go after the head now, you are missing minimum 4 weeks. And I think you've got to be severe.
So Dylan Shiel, you'd give him 4 weeks in the future?
In the future, because he's making a complete decision to go past the football to take the body. He misses the body, he gets the head. You know what? If you want to take that risk, you are dicing with 3 or 4 weeks. Call it 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You're dicing with 3 or 4 weeks on the sidelines. They're not going to do it. They'll change in a heartbeat.
They already have changed the MRO description, and it's based on the potential to cause injury. So now Michael Christian has...
But what does the injury look like? You can't tell the injury. That's my point.
I understand, but the potential to cause injury from a head-high bump, Michael Christian has more scope than he did 3 weeks ago because of the Dangerfield tackle. That's not just tackling, that's bumps as well.
Yeah, I agree. It's got to be the action. Of course, we want to protect concussions. I've got ex-teammates that are struggling, and it's terrible. So no doubt head knocks and head trauma have got to be the number one priority. And I think they are. I'm just not sure whether giving them a longer time on the sidelines is going to disincentivise. I mean, Ben Long and Dylan Shiel aren't going, well, I'm going to try and hit someone in the head because I'm only going to get 2 or 3 weeks, but if I get five, I won't do it. You're still going to give...
They're not going to do it on that... They're not going to go through that action.
It's split-second instinctive, King. You've got to give benefit of the doubt. They're not going into a game saying, I'm going to try and hip and shoulder someone in the head.
No one's saying it's premeditated.
Exactly.
But it's a deterrent. Is it not
a deterrent that they're already missing 2 and 3 weeks? Why is it a deterrent if they're going to get five instead of three?
They're getting fines.
Yeah, no, I can. Yes, you're right. So you're talking about the ones that are. Yeah, I agree with that.
2 weeks, and this is the biggest issue in the game. 2 weeks is not changing behaviour. We had five actions this weekend.
Yes.
This is when we're saying, oh, we're clamping down. The head's sacrosanct. We've got to protect. We've adjusted and amended the table. To what?
Yeah. So you mean more the tribunal? It's got to be more the action rather than the outcome, which I agree with. I think that's got to change.
If you're not serious about it, you know what? Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But this will cost us hundreds of millions of dollars down the track.
Yeah.
But mark my word that this will be the most expensive thing in AFL football in 10 years' time if we do nothing about it now. You either make a choice that we make change, and I'm not saying before these guys go up and we don't have a scapegoat. Yeah. Let's wait till they're parked. But something has to give. And if you don't want to change it, then wear what comes.
Yeah.
Joey, you speak about that split-second moment.
Yeah.
Surely you still have a choice to make in that moment, or is it too quickly? Too quick.
It's still an instinctive game. You're still... Ben Long was going for that ball right into the last second, saw a player, used his...
Is it coachable, though? Not every player does that.
Of course they don't. But how often has Dylan Sheil or Ben Long done that in a game of footy? It's happened once or twice. So it's still an instinctive thing.
They went past the ball to make contact. They knew at a point in time...
Exactly.
And this happens in slow motion for players.
In a split second
The public think, that's...
They made a choice to make contact.
They make a choice to go past the football to make contact. At that point... is where they have to, if they make that choice, you're out of the game for 3 weeks.
Well, they're already out. They're getting out. Yeah, they're out of the game.
If you have a look at the Ben Long...
I agree with you. It's got to be that...
there. He's made a choice, three steps out, that I'm now going for the player.
Yes. Yep, that's right.
I'm now going for the player. If you look at the Ben Long one again, he sets his feet...
He's going for the ball there.
Not a chance. His hands aren't even down.
That's the perfect technique for a ground ball. You use your hips and your... We're teaching players.
Watch him lift.
We're teaching players.
Watch him lift.
Yep, there.
So he lifts, going for the football.
No. He's after the football. He's gone for the football to the split second.
Has he gone for the football?
Gone past the
ball. He might have been protecting the space, but if he went for the
football... He's going for the football right to the last second as well.
What's Eber going for there?
To the ball? He wasn't going for the ball? No, that's... I agree with that. Absolutely. He's tipping in there.
We sort of...
They're going to get suspended. I agree with you. The action should be. They should be getting suspended. But I don't necessarily think they should be getting 4, 5, 6 weeks for...
No. I'm saying...
You've still got to give benefit of the doubt in a football motion, in an action. It's a split-second consequence. They're paying the consequences anyway, Sheil and Long, missing games of football. I just don't think 4 weeks versus two is going to change behaviour because...
But we've been down the two-week path and we haven't changed behaviour. Nothing's changed.
Because it's still instinctive and combative. You're still going to... You can make it 10 weeks and you're still going to have blokes
so in
the spur of the moment...
You're in the camp, so just cut to the end.
Yeah.
You're in the camp that I'm comfortable with concussion being part of our game.
No, I'm not saying...
Because you're not going to run it out of the game. The only way to run it out of the game is to stamp it with a huge penalty so the players stop the action.
They're getting suspended anyway.
It's not changing behaviour. We've got five...
Right, but why is 6 weeks going to change behaviour?
Because coaches are going to say, guys, you can't go past the football. We can't have you on the sidelines. We're trying to win a premiership here.
Yeah. I just don't think two weeks or 6 weeks is going to change behaviour.
Six, by the way.
No, you're disincentivised to do it anyway, but you've still got to give that slight benefit of the doubt. Like, that's why it's not intentional, because it's careless. The reason why it's careless in a bump is because it's split second. It's not a deliberate, premeditated action.
All right,
you've got to give benefit of the doubt.
There's more to play out this week. We'll see exactly what Ben Long gets at the tribunal. We've got plenty more to play out as well on First Crack. We can talk about the Roos, the Hawks, maybe curtain raiser teams versus blockbuster teams as well. We'll weigh up who's good to watch and who's not so good. Plenty more to come on First Crack. Welcome back to First Crack. We've got so much more to talk about, but I want to discuss this incident that happened last night with Lachie McDonald and Connor McKenna, where Lachie McDonald made a gesture regarding Connor McKenna's battle with COVID-19. It forced him to miss a couple of games, and he was really the poster boy for the illness in the AFL, an illness that has inflicted the entire world, including Australia and Melbourne, so clearly. There are people out there who are saying this is just a joke and we should move on. I disagree with those people. Now, I'm not saying he should be suspended, Lachie McDonald, or even necessarily fined, but I think the AFL needs to give him a please explain, and I think this needs to be an apology from Lachie McDonald to Connor McKenna, and I'll explain why. This has been compared to Sam Mitchell's sledge towards Essendon. It's been compared to other sort of slightly left-field sledges in the past. COVID-19 is an illness. would I ever sledge you, or would you ever sledge me about an illness I've had? I think that is completely off the table. And I'm all about banter on the field. As long as it's nothing to do with race or sexism or religion or anything deeply personal or an illness, I think it's play on. But I just didn't like that at all from Lachie McDonald. Luke McDonald. I don't think it's a hanging offence, but I don't agree with the people that say, oh, we just let it go, that's just play on. I don't think that at all. What did you make of it, Joey?
But before you go, what do you want to happen?
I think it should be an apology to Conor McKenna.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know what? If they gave him a fine, I wouldn't raise my eyebrows too much. But I think an apology is fine. I think the AFL has to look at it, and they will look at it tomorrow seriously.
Okay.
It was an immature sledge. I think that's all it is. And on a football field, Tom, there's a lot of immature stuff that gets said, and there's a lot of things that go on, and you can't hide anywhere. The cameras pick up anything. I agree with you. An immature sledge, and maybe you're right. Just to appease the people that were offended, and there would be some that are. Luke McDonald comes out and apologises and says, look, was distasteful, I apologise, and I think we leave it at that. I don't think it's a hanging offence like you said, and we don't need to overblow a situation like that. What do you think?
Kingy?
I'm Switzerland, mate. I don't really care. To be honest, it's these little things, they're tiny little things, and we blow them up.
Yeah.
Does he have to apologise? Maybe.
You'd be happy with an apology?
Well, I'm not fussed either way, to be honest.
I mean, what does an apology do, really?
I think it appeases the people that are offended and are upset by it. It just, it's the right thing to do.
It doesn't look good for the game. I think the AFL will come to that conclusion tomorrow, and then we'll see what comes of it. The Snorefest Kangaroos. David King, this is your former football club. No, but I'm going to leave you out of it initially.
Okay.
Joey, what do you make of North Melbourne at the moment?
They're stuck in a rut. They are just playing one way of football every time. You look at the numbers, they kick long to a contest, they take the least uncontested marks, they go short the least, and it's just not working for them. I mean, I can't think of the last time I saw Ben Brown. I can't think of the last time I saw him one-on-one inside the forward 50, coming out at the ball.
It's not helping him,
is it? It's not helping him. He's now going up on the wing to get a kick. I think they've got to be able to have, as I said before, with teams like Carlton and St Kilda, you need to have light and shade in your game. You need to be able to do different things and mix it up. At the moment, they're stuck in a rut playing the one way. It's a defensive way of playing. It means that if you're playing safe and long and wide, you allow your defence to set up behind the ball. That's the reason why you do it. But it's not working. Kangaroos are 18th in the competition for getting scored against when they go inside 50. So their slow, boring system is not actually helping them defensively, and it's not helping them offensively. So, look, I've got no doubt they'll be aware of that, and they've got to change some things up because they are playing a bit of a boring style of footy at the moment.
Is it because the forward 50 is not working? Is it because, you say that they've got to give Ben Brown opportunities for one-on-one? Mm. Well, how about Ben Brown comes to the party and takes some contested marks and becomes the answer forward of centre? Well, I know Nick Larkey's not there, so he's got a ruckman-type figure next to him in Campbell that doesn't quite work, in my opinion. But on the weekend against Essendon, they took three marks inside 50. Cam Zerha, Attlee and Bailey Scott.
Yeah.
Not at all to be seen. So I don't know whether it's, I don't know whether it's the tools not coming to the party, or do you have to cater for the way you play because Ben Brown's in horrible form?
Well, yeah, but you've also got to cater for what you've got. Ben Brown's not a contested marking player. Ben Brown doesn't
take big
pack marks. You think he's more of a lead. He's very good lead up at the footy, come back and work his opponent over and get some space. Yeah, they've just got to change up. One thing they could do maybe a bit more of, and this is a little bit off track, but you talk about bang for buck, and I think it applies with Brodie Grundy and Max Gawn as well. Can you use your ruckman forward of centre more, like a Dusty Martin role, rather than get them to get possessions behind the ball? Goldstein's the premier ruckman of the competition at the moment. Can you get more bang for buck and use him in your front half? Because
risk. I mean, he's been the best player the Kangas have had all year.
Yeah, he has been. He has. But stoppages, like in your back half, you're only scoring 4 points a game from stoppages in your back half. So why waste your ruck work in your defensive 50 or defensive half? Instead, maybe have Goldstein as a player that can drift forward, take his ruckman with him, cause some mismatches. I'm trying to, because you're right. The
problem is he gets involved in the chain.
He does.
He's a link ruckman.
Yeah.
He's more than just a ruckman to the Kangaroos. They went to Ben Brown 14 times. He didn't take one mark inside the forward 50. 14 times. You know what? If I'm the Kangaroos, and I'll get passionate.
And you were the Kangaroos.
I get passionate. I'm at the Kangaroos now, and I'm looking at the list management, I'm saying, here, look, Ben, we know we offered you this. We had this contract on the table.
Yep.
It was for 3 years, you want four.
Yeah.
It's for X amount of dollars, you want this. You know what? You chose not to sign it. We're taking it back. You've had your opportunity. It's now off the table. Let's talk again at the end of the year.
And what would you be offering at that point?
Well,
then?
Clearly it's on form. You didn't want to come to the party when we thought we put a reasonable offer to you. You thought you'd hold out and hang us out to dry a fraction financially. That's fine. That's on you. No worries. But you know what? Your form doesn't stack up for the figures you're putting in front of us. Let's start again. Let's start this negotiation again.
Does that make sense?
That's the risk you take. That's the risk you take as a player. If you choose not to sign at some point in your career, it's because you're backing yourself in to become better when you are ready to sign your contract or wanting more money. If it goes the other way, well, sometimes you might have to.
He's kicked 63, 61 and 64 goals the last 3 years. And he's kicked 7 goals in 6 games so far this year. So it's a bad time to run out of form.
But Joey said he's a lead-up forward. But how many lead-up forwards are there in the comp at the moment?
No, he's an elite talent in the forward 50.
Yeah.
I've got no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But I'm not changing the way you play just to cater for one player.
But I'm saying it's hard for him to get kick goals the way they're playing. Yeah. By going so slow, he's not getting any 1v1 looks inside forward 50. He's going up against 2 or 3 opponents.
I do remember a former North Melbourne coach who did change the way he played to cater for one player. But that's another discussion altogether, Kingy. Talk about Hawthorn Footy Club. We're talking about clubs that aren't exactly winning games of football. Hawthorn are 3-3, they're not out of it, but they're not playing very good footy either. Clarko's their coach, he's the master, but they're playing pretty ugly footy as well. And Jake Nile wrote a really good story in the paper on Saturday morning where he talked about Hawthorn not having blockbuster games, that they shouldn't be on prime time. Do you agree, Kingy? Hawthorn aren't playing the footy that deserves eyeballs.
Well, we're going to have a rolling fixture, aren't we, effectively?
Yeah.
So
makes it easier.
Gee, it's going to be tough for those teams to get the prime time slots. And it doesn't mean we won't watch them. It doesn't mean we don't love, you know, as supporters will still love their teams and they'll still follow. But it's very difficult to sit through games with, like today, 4-3. But I would have thought Richmond would have put on a show today.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought they would have got hold of Sydney. So are you necessarily saying that that's a curtain raiser type game if we had a double header?
We've got curtain raisers and we've got blockbusters.
Yeah.
I think we've over-exaggerated with the Hawks on the weekend. They played terribly and it was a very ordinary game of football Friday night. But before that, and they're the number one play-on team in the competition. They changed their style this year. They've played more, wanting to play more like a Richmond brand, where they're getting back in the defensive half and trying to play with less possession and slingshot. Now, it did not work at all against Collingwood. Whether that was by design or Collingwood took it away from them, they played a completely different brand of game. But that hasn't been the norm for them. So I think sometimes we've just got to take a breath and sit back and say, hang on, that was a real, like Richmond have done sometimes, and Collingwood have done. We've seen games of Collingwood go, how boring are they? And other times we've seen Collingwood go, wow, look what they do. Yep. So we've got to be careful with week on week that we change up what we think of teams.
Okay.
Because they are playing a different brand of footy. They're trying to play more like Richmond.
It's a good call, because there's an old saying in boxing that style makes fights.
Yep.
So two opposing styles doesn't necessarily give you a great fight.
Yep.
But if you have two similar fighters, you can get a great 10-rounder. So I think that when you look at the matchup, sometimes they're all in water.
Yep.
Sometimes they're both the same and you get a ripping.
Okay, the Hawks played Richmond the other week. There was no problem with how Hawthorn were playing
night. But who are the blockbuster teams regardless of who they're playing against?
Oh, right now, I love watching Port Adelaide play.
Yep.
Brisbane are aggressive. Essendon have been aggressive.
Yep.
I think Collingwood are really good to watch. I know they've had a couple of stinkers thrown in there.
Yeah.
St Kilda
are good to watch.
They're good to watch. Yeah. Gold Coast.
Yeah, but they keep it pretty. I think we got caught up more that just watching the young team develop and win.
Yeah,
they don't necessarily play the most attractive style of footy, but it was because they were winning and they were a young team and Raoul was playing. And
Suns. Suns are great, aren't they?
The Gold Coast Suns.
Yeah, you love watching them play.
No, I say they don't play the most attractive
brand
of
football.
No, they play on one half of the ground in a lot of contested style of game. We got caught up by their young personnel and Raoul and winning a couple of games that we thought, and Ben King, we thought, oh, wow.
All right.
I don't think they play the most attractive style of footy.
So a question without notice, if you had to pick two teams to watch play against each other tomorrow, which two teams would you watch?
Tomorrow.
I'm Port Adelaide and Brisbane, just like we saw last week.
Yeah. I'm anything with Essendon at the moment.
Yeah. Yep.
They're really aggressive and good to watch. And, you know, I know they're missing some stars, but I think they're very exciting.
Yeah, I scribbled down Port Adelaide. Essendon would be a good game to watch.
All right, so
every team can play. It's just strange. It's King. Every team's best footy looks great. I mean, we've seen some glimpses of Geelong. The third quarter the other night, the last quarter against Carlton. Look, Carlton are really good to watch,
Carlton
too.
Carlton are good to watch.
Yep. So, you know what? Carlton St Kilda. Put them on a prime.
Carlton St Kilda.
Although they played last week.
I called some teams boring a couple of weeks ago. I got some feedback, so I'm just going to back off.
Who'd you call boring again, King?
No.
One team that wasn't boring today was Port Adelaide over the GWS Giants. They're playing some really good footy, and it was Ken Hinckley, AFL Life membership combined, playing and coaching, and he was the centre of the song after the game as well. Great to see Kenny Hinckley. I've been really strong on this Kingian, Joey, since the very start of the season when Kenny Hinckley's put it on the line himself. Yes, we need to make finals if I'm going to guarantee my job beyond 2020. And now they're playing really good footy and they're backing it up.
Yeah, spot on. I was just chatting to Ruby before we come on the show, and we both said Kenny Hinckley's the type of coach you'd love to play under. Just from what you see with him, the way that he speaks, that, you know, I just think he's doing a terrific job, and I'm liking that, you know, he's sticking fat with his group and they're backing him in. We've seen it with Nathan Buckley and Damien Hardwick. I just think he'd be a coach you'd want to play for as a player.
When was the last time you saw a coach in the middle of a huddle like that?
Yeah.
Can you...
How many coaches would feel comfortable doing that?
And get involved. And yeah. The players loved it. I mean, that is one happy footy club. I mean, it's easy to be happy when you're sitting top of the table, that's going to last. That's going to carry on.
That's authentic. You can't manufacture that. I think we're starting to see with a few of the younger coaches. I think, you know, you hear about the connections clubs have with Carlton, with David Teague, and maybe Kangaroos at Reece Shaw. But to see one of the sort of the older coaches, like, I think that's genuine and authentic. And that's showing a sign of the way they're playing and what this hub has done for Port Adelaide. I think it's set them up beautifully, and they no doubt can win the premiership.
You've studied Kenny's coaching
as close as
anyone the last 2 to 3 years. What have you seen this year that makes you think, you know what, it's different to 2019, different to 2018?
Kenny Hinckley's always been a coach that's been aggressive and bold with the way he's wanted to play. He's tried things. They play the aggressive halfback. They've bowled with their ball movement. This year they've added a layer of light and shade. They go fast and they go long, but they've also got the element of kicking the ball around, let's set ourselves up, you know, using the halfbacks in Hartlett and Byrne Jones. So they've got the two modes, which is the key in footy. You can't just... Their issue last year, they were going inside 50, they were going fast, but they weren't scoring because it was just too chaotic. Now they've got the second gear, kick it around, and they're playing some really good footy.
Would you say that Ken Hinckley's almost reinvented himself in that regard?
Just evolving.
Because they had a flat spot. They haven't played finals for a long period of time now.
Yeah, but they were doing a lot right last year, numbers-wise. They were just inefficient inside 50. They couldn't find a way to score, and they've adjusted. They've realised, well, if we just keep bombing it in, make it hard, it helps that Charlie Dixon's in their forward line this year, fit and healthy, but they've just got that second gear to their game, and they're playing some really good footy.
We sat here a couple of weeks ago, and Alistair Clarkson was bemoaning the lack of holding the ball free kicks that were paid in the game against North Melbourne. Luke Beveridge then criticised, not Alistair Clarkson, but the AFL, in his words, I think, bowing to Alistair Clarkson's wishes. And there's been a slight shift in the way things have worked. Joey, what have you made of the new interpretations for holding the ball?
Oh, look, I think anyone that watched a lot of footy this weekend's frustrated. They're not sure what he's going to get paid and what's not. I certainly know the players are. You've seen the amount of players this week not sure what's going to get paid and what's not. There's four things that can happen. You get caught with the ball and you don't make an attempt. You can get caught holding the ball, or it can be a ball up. You can get caught straight. These are without prior opportunity, mind you. You can get caught straight away and you make an attempt. And if it spills out, 8 times out of 10, the umpire just calls it play on. The other 2 times, they call it incorrect disposal. Yeah. You don't know what you're going to get anymore. So what I would love is for the AFL to come out and say, this is what we want it to look like. If they want to keep the ball live at all costs, let us know. Let the players know and say, as long as you make some sort of attempt and get the ball out, we'll let it play, as long as it's not an intentional throw. But if you want to keep the integrity of incorrect disposal, which is a big part of our game, keep the integrity. You can't have a bit of both ways. I think at the moment it's just a raffle.
Yeah.
We're not sure what we're going to get. And what's worse, and we'll see some vision, is now when we're seeing players choosing to not win the ball because they feel they're going to get pinged, and they're sitting off waiting for someone else to win it. And when you've got Joel Selwood, the toughest player to win a ball that I've ever played against, choosing, because he's also a smart footballer, he would have gone down low and hard for that. But he goes, you know what? I'll wait. I'll sit on the tackle and lock the ball in because I'm more of a chance to get a free kick. Do we want that in our game?
No. Well, obviously the answer is no.
Integrity,
you want
to win the ball. So
Is it not just teething problems? Are we just not trying to... Just give the umpires a chance and the game a chance to catch up to itself a little bit. I mean, we made a pretty drastic...
It is, but give us... We've all agreed in the last 2 weeks they've changed the interpretations, but give the fans, give the media, give the players some transparency.
Education.
This is what we want the game to look like. Yep. So the game tonight, the Carlton and Bulldogs game, was a great game, but the umpires put the whistle away. They gave them as much opportunity as they could to get the ball out. The Thursday night game, they were pinging blokes as soon as they picked the ball up and were tackled. So... What do we want? But I don't mind what it is, as long as they let
night.
Us know.
At least it went all night on Thursday night.
Yep.
At least it was the same all game today. So, look, I don't know whether I'm breaching confidence or not, but I spoke to Hayden Kennedy today.
Right.
If you look at round 4 to round 5, the prior opportunities, free kicks went up 10%, so negligible.
Yep.
Incorrect disposal was the same on average, 12 to 13 a game. The genuine attempt free kick went from an average of 4 to 22. So guys not making genuine attempts. They're the guys who get tackled to the ground. You can see the ball in one hand. They're just laying there. They're not really trying to get the ball out. They're not trying to perform a skill, whether it be a handball or a kick. They're just laying there like, you know, dead ducks. So I think we'll get used to it. And you know what? We may lose a few along the way. We may give a few that are wrong and miss a few that are there. But I like where it's going. I think fundamentally, do you like where it's going?
I agree. We need more free kicks to keep the ball live. I agree. I would probably prefer to penalise the tackler more than the ball winner. I think we can pay more free kicks for in the back, around the shoulder, tackles that aren't quite. I think if it's a perfect tackle, great. If it's anything other than perfect, let's penalise the tackler. Let's reward the positive action, not reward the negative action. That's maybe something that I think I'd like to see more of. I know Eddie McGuire's in that camp, to actually still pay the free kick, but give it to the player that's won the ball, not the guy that's sitting off waiting to, you know, waiting
to
lay
it into your arguments.
But if Collingwood's playing, is it? Sorry, should I not avoid
it? It's just struggling. Don't bring it in.
Sorry. I've just heard Ed also agree. There's a lot of tackles that get driven into the back that are still paid.
I know you've always been that way, to reward the tackler. Yeah. But I just think there's so many players around the ball now. If we can find a way to keep the ball moving, that they will open up fractionally. You will hold players a bit deeper for that quick kick coming out. It's a lever we're trying.
Yeah.
I think we've got to give it a six.
Give it a try. No drama. But let us all know what they're trying.
They haven't had time answer. Is they haven't had time.
There's a fair bit on their plate. There's a fair bit on our plate as well. We've got the Gold Coast Suns coming up. I want to talk to you about Isaac Rankin, Joe. He, after one game, he's lit the AFL world up. And Matrix players. I assume you've both seen The Matrix, and we'll talk about the players who make time stand still. More to come on First Crack.
Done pretty well. Here's a little glimpse. Oh, what about that for your first? What about that? Rankin's done it once. He couldn't get out the first time. Off the ground. Can you believe that? The best first two goals ever.
Andy Rowell, who?
Welcome back to First Crack. That's Isaac Rankin. There's a great article on the Fox Footy website from Ben Waterworth where he interviewed WA talent manager and also a friend of ours at Fox Footy, Mick Ablett. And Ablett said that he's always thought Rankin, ever since he first saw him play, was like Andrew McLeod. And now we can sort of see why. He had an unbelievable game against the Demons. What did
too
you make?
Good. That's a problem. He was too good.
You don't do that.
Was it?
Most people can't do that in their career. In your first game, you meant to just be feeling your way out. Like that was, it was phenomenal. It was. It was just some of the subtle things that he did on a football field. It was amazing. Yeah.
And it leads me into this. Can you? I teased matrix footballers. Can you define to us what a matrix player is?
Well, everyone talks about Scott Pendlebury and how when he gets the ball, he can see what's happening around him before others know what's going on. He can slow the game down. He can find gaps, and the commentary always goes to his basketball background.
Yeah.
So that sort of player that's ahead of the game, and the game happens in slow motion.
So what sort of players is he?
Well, I'm like Toby Green can do that. I think Robbie Gray can do that. Pendlebury, we all talk about, but this kid, in one burst of what 100 minutes of footy, has just shown he's already got that uncanny ability to know where traffic's flowing and one step. And to steal a basketball term that we were talking about before, he snapped the ankles of James Harden.
Yeah.
He just went bang, gone. So I think those players can be quite special.
Yeah.
And this move here.
Well, he bounced that himself.
The ball, and then boom.
And Harms went to trip him.
Harms is gone. In half a step, he's gone. I feel for Harms in this.
We've
all been James Harms in that situation. But not many players can do that. I think Connor Rosie can do that.
Yeah.
But I don't know many other players.
I think Jai Simpkin can. He's twinkle toes. Jai Simpkin, they can't lay a glove on him. Love the way he plays. I think Taron Thomas has got a little bit of that too.
Is it just innate, Joey?
It is. That's something you can't really train, to be honest. It's not something you can just add to your game. It's just a natural instinctive flair that you just have just naturally got. It's amazing. And
tried to add that to your game.
It didn't work. No, got told to watch Del Santo on Pendlebury one day. It'd be nice to play like them, those matrix guys. But is it possible that they could run first four in the Rising Star?
The
Gold Coast Suns. Rankin, I think now will win it. I don't think Rowell.
After one game?
No, well, not one game. By the end of the year.
But you've watched him play once and you think he's going
to... Tom, you don't need to be a footy expert to watch Isaac Rankin.
Joey, I'm not disagreeing with you, but it just shows how special.
Well, Rankin will win it. Anderson will come second. Matty Rowell will come third. I don't think Matty Rowell can win it off four. And then Connor Butterick's a little star too. Yeah. They could run first four in the Rising Star.
What's the first four called in a race?
The Quadrilla.
The Quadrilla.
The Quadrilla.
The first four. I think that... once you've got to write down that name, you'd want to have a pretty special reason not to write down Raoul. It sits with you for a little while when you write the name down.
I think though by the end of the year people will be comfortable to write Rankin.
Yeah.
As you know, instead of Rao.
It just seems to me like we've got a group of teenagers in the AFL that are special at the moment. And I know we've had teenagers come through in the past, one, two, three, four at a time, but we've got a group of 10 or 15 guys, the King brothers as well, that are generational players, it seems, from a very small sample size. Is that how you see it, Joey?
Yeah, I think we're spoiled for the teenage talent we've got, and that's why we're going to be so careful we don't stifle the game too much. We want to see, you know, the Rosies and Butters and Dersmers and the guys from the last draft, Bailey Smith, and the guys in this draft. We want to see these tricks every single week. We want to see their talents. I think we are. I think we're spoiled with these teenagers that are playing in the competition now, and how easily they've just, you know, fit into the AFL system of playing.
The other thing is, and we touch on this a lot with the season players, oh, we had the interrupted pre-season period. They played round one, then they had 3 months of just this, you know, kick to kick with one player, limited exposure to team strategy. The younger players have paid probably the heaviest price for that.
Yeah.
They haven't been learning off the stars. They haven't been learning, you know, the nuances of diet and lifestyle and the little tricks that can make you a better player quicker than what the average does. So we're seeing it already. Yeah. Wait till next year.
And this year with the situation with hubs and having resilience and mental toughness and all these things that are going to fast track them, in 2 or 3 years' time, they're going to be, you know, having issues with footy going, hey, you know what, in my first year, I was playing off 4 days, I was going to hubs, I was away from families. Nothing will faze them with the footy to come. So this group could be something really special. We've just got to get the game to allow them to show their talents.
You also left out Tom Green from that potential top
Tom
four.
Green as well, he's a beauty.
What's wrong with GWS, Kingy?
What's wrong with I want to know what's happened to their midfield. Where are they? They've gone missing. They really have.
So Stephen Cornelio had a quiet night the other night. He's the new captain.
It's not just one night. They had 26 inside 50s last week and 33 today.
They're 17th in the comp for inside 50s.
Am I right in saying that they've lost inside 50s every single game this year?
I think so.
They're
second last for inside 50s for the season.
So what does that say about their on-ball brigade and where they were last year and where they are now?
Well, this is what I'm getting to. Yep. They haven't got a midfielder rated elite. Now, they've got the best crop of midfielders that you would want. Taranto is out at the moment. He's probably the one that comes back in and can spike. He's a reigning best and fairest winner. But they've gone from second to 15th year to year with clearances, second to 10th for contested possession. They're being saved by the conversion of their forward 50, their ability to put it on the scoreboard once it goes in. Now, that's a little bit to do with how they play. I get that. But they are miles off what they were last year as a midfield core. And until that corrects, they're going to be up and down. They're going to be a really fluky team. And there's no logical reason for it.
No.
They're just not tough enough at the moment. And that's why their numbers reflect individually the way they do.
We're more than a third away through the season and they're 10th on the ladder. Do you have concerns about whether they can win the flag, Joey?
Yeah, I do now. Yeah, especially as we just said, the numbers show that they're not playing a sustainable brand of footy. They're very low in clearances and inside 50s. They're getting saved by being so efficient with their last kick inside 50 and having the guys being so efficient at goal. That's not sustainable. That's very hard to keep going that way. So they need to get more ball in their front half and win more ball. And you're right, the only thing you can put on is the desire and the intensity. Is it as matching the teams they're playing against? Because the talent is clearly there. We know that. So what is it? Why
we've seen teams belted in a grand final and not recover the next year.
I didn't think that would be them. I thought they were a mentally resilient group.
They could be. They still can be.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But we're looking for signs. I mean, it's easy to look at the win. It's not about how many have won and how many have lost, really.
No.
Most teams are in the hunt, really.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Perriman's a wingman. He's rated elite. Haynes at halfback has saved them time and time again. He's elite. Outside of that, I'm wondering who their next ranked player is. You know, everyone says, but I love Toby Green as a half forward. Yeah. He's the half forward.
Yep.
He's not in the engine room. So I think Leon Cameron will be sitting back saying, OK, how are we getting smashed at clearances?
Does he mix it up? I mean, he's got Tom Green's almost the one in there that's doing some good things.
Yeah.
First-year player. Do they have to mix up the dynamic? Do they maybe have to get Toby Green back in the midfield or, you know, try something a bit. Callum Ward, just say, you know what, Callum, well, you've got to go back in there and just do what you've done for 10 years and go and be an absolute bull. Taranto will help too.
They've gone from corridor to boundary as well.
Yeah, they're playing
very
conservative.
They've become boring. Yeah. So something's got to change. There's got to be a drastic shift at the Giants, regardless of them being 3-3.
Yeah.
If they continue the way they are, they are no chance playing the football they're playing at the moment.
To play finals or to win the flag?
It's all about winning flag for the Giants. Yeah. I mean, they can
sneak in the eight, but that's not what they're better
to die
than
for.
That.
I know we've got a long way to go, and it's not. I hate talking about winning it and all that sort of stuff at this point because it's crazy. It's what happens in the last 6 weeks. But right now, they're out of sorts as an elite, potentially elite group of midfielders that need to correct in a hurry.
Strong stuff. Really good stuff. We've got more to come on First Crack. We always peg Kingy and I, and I'm going to ask you to peg who's going to win the flag after the break.
What?
Joey, and we also got...
Just said it was hopeless.
And we're going to talk about the Demons as well, because they had their second win for the year. Stay with us on First Crack. First Crack. I want to talk about the Demons, Joey and Kingy.
Before you do, I think it's important that we talk about what we did in the break there. And I know you'll dust over this. I want you to rank, you two, rank the first year coaches. Shaw, Teague, Longmuir, Nix, and I'm putting Rutten in there, and Rattan. Who have you got at the top end, and who have you got that's struggling?
My top two are Rutten and Teague.
Rattan and Teague, not Rutten, Rattan.
Rattan and Teague. Yeah. Oh, you got Rutten there, do you?
I
don't classify him as a first-year coach.
Okay.
I know he's coaching sort of John Worsfold, but it's not completely his chair.
Don't argue against yourself.
Sorry.
Rattan, Teague.
Rattan, Teague.
Keep going.
Longmuir is next, I think, after the last fortnight.
Yeah.
And then Shaw and Nix in that
order.
So
you're just basically going off the ladder.
Well, this is why I don't get asked the questions.
Did you want all of them or just a couple? Rattan has been the best. Longmuir second. Rattan third. Teague fourth.
Fourth?
Yeah, I know. That's a bit low.
They're eight.
Move on.
Shaw and Nix.
It's a tough one. Look, there's some work to do. It's a good crop. It's a tough job this year.
Yep.
And a few really showing the way.
Yep. How do you rank Simon Goodwin's year so far, Joey?
No, below average.
Yep.
So there's good signs on the weekend.
I'm intrigued with their selection philosophies. It worked on the weekend. Harley Bunnell came back in. They dropped Adam Tomlinson. They had what was the other one? They brought someone else back in. Jetta came back in, which was really important for them. And Wiedemann up forward. And even without Tom and Donald, Wiedemann presented that focal point. So it worked. But for the 3 weeks before then, it didn't work. Do you think the Melbourne we saw will give them some momentum? Or do you think it was just an important win to get, but it's not going to have any bearing on what we see ahead?
No, I think it was a big win for them. And we were hard on them last week. And the whole football world was watching Melbourne and how they'd respond. It threatened to be classic Melbourne. Be really beaten by a first gamer.
Yep.
But it was just... I thought in the last quarter when the chips were down, Max Gawn tried to do everything to get his football club across the line. Everyone will talk about that kick of Oliver to Petrarca for the big goal that said we're home.
Yeah.
But the effort of their leaders in that last 20 minutes said to me, OK, if you're a young player watching those guys, you're learning, you're growing and you're building.
Yeah, I thought it was a good step. I think they've still got a long way to go, but it was some signs. I think for them, I love the effort they get from the other guys like Vandenberg and Hannon and Harms. Those sort of friends that are so important, Melksham. Those guys in 2018 were really important to them. I think those guys are crucial. But it was a step in the right direction. I wasn't completely convinced, but it was better than what they'd been doing.
Bendel in that forward line changes the dynamic, and I tell you what. Byron's little nephew.
He can play well. There's another teenager.
Little knock on to Hannon.
Handball that he did over his shoulder in the space.
Oh, Pickett. Yeah, really good.
He's a beauty.
Cozzy Pickett.
They took 12 marks inside 50. That averaged 7 in the month prior to that.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes things just click and you don't know why. You have no real... There's no real logic. McDonald's on the pine with a poke in the eye.
Yeah.
He's not actually out there. He's been your focal point for a month. So sometimes the randomness of having to change the mix down there can work for you. Now they have to just build. We have to see it week after week because too often it's there for 1 week, gone the next.
Each week, Joey, we peg who we think is going to win the flag. And if you change your peg, you have to make it really crystal clear why. Now, I've stuck with Port Adelaide the last 3 weeks,
wobbly,
I think it was.
And
when they lost to Brisbane, I stayed with Port and I couldn't be happy with that decision now. Who are you going to go with, Kingy?
No, I'm staying with Brisbane.
You're still pegging Brisbane?
Look, I think that...
Rightly so.
No one's going to have the perfect season, particularly this year. So you're going to drop some games. As long as you drop those games still showing your identity and who you are. So I'm going to stick. I'm going to stick fat.
Trust. You need trust in this team.
Who are you going
with? I'm going with Geelong. I've got trust in the Cats. A lot of their indicators are good. They're a really strong front half pressure team, strong clearance team. We know they're really good defensively. I know at times they can be a bit of a bore fest team, but I think they've got that ability to play.
You've chosen a boring team.
They've got two different gears. We saw what they did in the third quarter against Brisbane.
By the way.
Yeah, Geelong gave them a lesson. I think Geelong, I trust them that they'll be there at the right end of the year. Their leaders are rock solid. If they can stay fit and healthy, just got to get their ruck situation sorted. If they keep doing that...
What is their best ruck situation?
I think maybe at the moment still Fort.
Blitzar's in the finals.
Blitzar's at fullback. Blitzar's at fullback.
Flip him in.
Keep him there, and they'll be in the top four. They'll be playing in prelims, so I'm going to stick with them. They'll be thereabouts.
Who's the best player in the comp right now, Kingy?
Best player still Lachie Neale for me.
Agree. And you are a Brisbane man. What about you?
I'd still take Nat Fyfe.
Yeah. As a forward or a midfielder? Because he played a lot forward.
He can do both. That's
Nat Fyfe in the goal square, it was a godsend for Fremantle yesterday. Those young kids to actual high-level responsibility for the last 2 or 3 minutes of that game. Yep. Fantastic. Yep.
Big win from the Dockers. And a big night tomorrow night on 360. It's David Teague and Nathan Buckley. They'll be on with Jared and Robbo. Then on the couch, they'll rip it all apart. And then Collingwood versus Geelong on Thursday night. This is all coming up on Fox Footy. Joey, great debut and first crack. Kingy, we'll see you this week. Have a great week and make sure you tune in.